Today's sponsor is Home Theater Solutions. Absolutely love these guys. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. Home Theater Solutions specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit htsav.net. All right, welcome back. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. Good morning. Merry Christmas. Happy week of the before the new year, I guess we should call it. It's not quite new year, but it is. We're past Christmas, so we're in that week. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me. Aloha.
Aloha, bro.
How are you? Aloha, bro.
Aloha, bro.
You got it.
So, Dave Schofield. Is that right?
That's right. You got it.
Pronounce it correctly. Part of, so we were just discussing. So you, funny story. I was doing a podcast the other day, came out, and you and Aaron Chavone from upstairs, the massage therapist.
Right.
What's her, Lanikai?
Lanikai Wellness, I think.
Yeah, Lanikai Wellness. She's upstairs above my salon. You guys were out on the sidewalk with some contraption.
Right.
I'm like, shit, I got to go see what's going on.
What's
because
going
this
on?
Looks interesting. And you were... You've taken a row machine, the typical kind where you might sit and it kind of has the T-bar.
Right.
And you pull, you've converted one of these things into a more traditional style rowing sort of.
Yeah, well, it was designed by a Hawaiian outrigger canoe paddler to be able to practice the canoe paddling stroke outside of the canoe, say in the wintertime. And so, yeah, it's set up like a rowing machine with a cable. But instead of having like a T-bar, it has a paddle, a canoe paddle had the blade cut off, and it's just the shaft and the handle. So it helps you to practice that stroke which is in the Hawaiian outrigger canoe is much different than, say, like a lake canoe. The paddle is more straight up and down. There's a twist and a reach, and there's a very long stroke in the water, and then really fast on the in-air part. And so this little machine helps you to practice that. And Aaron is my first guinea pig, and hopefully would be my first stroker in the canoe, which is the seat one, which is the front person, which sets the pace of the canoe.
Well, it's awesome. And so I wanted to say, so it's East Coast Outrigger Association, www.ecora.org is part of the organization, but you're starting the New Hope Canoe Club Atlantic.
That's right. So I just moved here to Lewis, Delaware from Hawaii. I was living
Welcome.
On Oahu. Yeah, thank you. Was living on Oahu, had a dream job of animal rescue, working with Hawaiian monk seals and humpback whales. And along with all that, I started paddling competitively with New Hope Canoe Club, part of New Hope Church on Oahu, and did channel races that are 30 to 40 miles long and then sprint races, and just fell in love with the sport. Found it to be time for me to move back to the East Coast. I'm originally from Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, spent time working on the Delaware shores back in the day, and thought, hey, I got to go back east. Why not bring Aloha and Hawaiian outrigger canoe paddling to the East Coast? And so I'm trying to start up a canoe club.
Well, listen, I love it. I think, you know, I call you one of the hustlers. You know, I love, you know, you get something kind of stuck in your craw and you're going to go for it,
right?
You know, and don't stop and talk to me because you're going to hear an earful. And those are the kind of people that I enjoy, passionate people about things that, you know, that are very cool. And, you know, I feel like I had a weird weekend. Besides the fact that it was Christmas, right? Great. But I had this weird moment this weekend where I watched two podcasts, and both podcasts were talking about this virtual reality.
Hmm.
And, of course, you know, my kids, my son has an Oculus. You know, it's fun, right? It's niche-y, right? It's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this whole world,
right,
that's taking place. It's kind of almost like, I don't want to say a revolution, but it's kind of has that kind of that secret kind of society kind of feel where there's this whole society of virtual reality people. And I'm at that weird age. I think a couple things happened to me this weekend. One, I realized there's this whole kind of virtual reality world that's starting, you know, with the metaverse and all this, you know, Facebook's starting to do it now. And then I also realized that I'm at this weird age that I just don't care about it.
Right. I'd rather be outside. Right?
Yeah. I spent some time on the couch today. Listen, I'm not swinging the I gotta be outside flag all day.
Sure, right? Sure.
I mean, I got up this morning, ran. I did 4 mile run this morning in the dark. I got my steps in, right?
Good,
but
good.
I don't need to be outside all the time. I love to be outside, but I'm not going to feel bad if I watch some football.
Sure.
But what was worrying to me, or not worrying, but just kind of an eye opener, was the fact that I'm just getting at that age where I just don't really care. It's like when our parents or our grandfather was in his 50s and they said, oh, there's an internet.
Yeah.
And he said, I could care less. Right. Or, pop, we got a cell phone. He said, I could care less.
Right.
You know, and now it's this.
You find yourself at that age.
I'm at that age. Yeah, and it's weird because it is probably one of the coolest things. And I guess the reason I brought it up is because this guy said that there's a giant group of people that would rather spend their time in virtual reality. And so I'm like, how do we hold on to, like, work being outside and canoeing and outrigging and paddling?
Well, it reminds me of a cartoon I saw a while ago where the mother's standing at the door and the two kids are glued to the television, and she's pointing outside and saying the real HD is out there.
Right.
And like you said, I watched a fair amount of football yesterday, but yeah, getting outside and the days of like playing outside like a block wide. Hide and go seek until your parents are yelling out the window for you to come in and it's been dark for an hour. You know, those days seem to be gone.
Yeah, it's really weird. I don't know. Bro, I don't know what happened this weekend, but there was this moment and I just had this overwhelming feeling like life is changing and I don't really want to be on board with it. And it was just very strange. I don't know. And then we watched Ready Player One. I'm like, I got to show my kids this. And it's this whole, basically, we're all living in this virtual world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think at 53, I don't have a desire to do that. I like to be outside. I love to, you know, run. I love to see the paddling. I love, you know, you sent me the video. I love watching that. It immediately reminded me of Magnum P.I.
Right. There you go.
You know, and when Tom Selleck came rolling down the face of that freaking wave with that one-man paddleboard, I'm like, shit, I want to be Tom Selleck.
There you go.
But it's an awesome, you know, how do we remind people how awesome that is? How do we bring people out there? Because it could be a little intimidating, right?
Right.
How do you get them to come out and put a toe in the water?
Well, you know, I think this is it. I think it's the state sport of Hawaii, and there are people doing it here on the East Coast. This ECORA, this East Coast Association, has about 12 clubs up and down the East Coast from Boston down to Florida. So people are doing it. And I'm telling you, it's an addictive sport. It's something that when you get in that canoe and you feel, and you're paddling with six other people,
right,
and you feel that unity in that canoe moving together, there's nothing like it. And then you add, if you're a competitive person, and even if you're not a competitive person, if you add in there's a canoe next to you, the natural human instinct is to try to paddle faster than them or move in front of them. And so it's just a great sport, and there will, yes, be a competitive side of it. My hope is that we're paddling against Philadelphia and Boston and Upper Chesapeake Bay and places like that. But I do want it to also be a giving back to the community. So one thing I want to mention is this is not a tourist operation. It's not like come on a tour and pay a rental fee. This is really for the community for those that want to compete competitively, they can. And I also hope to be able to reach out to churches and schools and offer it to kids and maybe even college kids. So it really is a community effort. Think of it as like, this is Lewis's team, and Lewis's team is going out and competing. I think about Lewis and Bloom, which is a fantastic local project, and a lot of pride is put into that. And it's just beautiful every spring and summer when we see the fruits of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, I'm trying to go after that idea. My mom lives here and she's part of that, or was part of the Lewis and Bloom, and so are some of her friends.
Well, I don't know if you were here or remember, but Shell Brothers used to do the dragon boat races.
Heard about that, yeah.
It was really cool, and it was a big deal for a while. I don't know what happened. It just kind of faded away. You can only do, it was more than just the paddling, right? It was a whole event.
Yeah.
But it was really cool, and you know, the people were really into it, and they had, you know, they, I don't know how many people, maybe 10 people on the team, maybe it was more than that, but it was really cool. And they used to do it down the Lewis Canal. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know what happened to it, but it's that same style kind of.
Yeah.
And you, and so if people don't know, so I was watching the video. So it's that canoe with the bars with kind of the ballast on right. one side. What right. is?
So it's a 44-foot long canoe.
Right.
It's fiberglass. There's one, the fiberglass ones that we are currently popular weigh about 450 pounds. There's a new breed of Unlimiteds coming out that are the same 44 feet long with the stanchions, like you said. They're called yakus. Those go out to an ama, which is the pontoon.
Yakus.
On, yakus
those
and
are
ama.
The bars that go out.
Right, and then the ama is the pontoon or float.
The ama.
Ama, yeah.
Like Tama.
Yeah, like
okay. I'm trying to help myself because I'll forget
yeah,
this
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, Ama and Yaku's, but the new Unlimiteds are only the same size boat at only like 150 pounds, so they're super light.
So does that? I mean, obviously, it stabilizes the canoe, right?
Right.
I mean, you put how many people in a canoe, and I would imagine without it, might just kind of tip
well, and
over.
You can still what they call huli. You can still flip that boat over in high seas and things like that. So you do have to be conscious.
What do they
of
call
that.
It?
Huli.
Huli.
To flip over is to huli.
Okay.
So you don't want a huli. So
we're learning things here.
We're learning Hawaiian.
I love it. Yeah, it's really cool that you know that has that stabilizer on it because
right.
I think a lot of people get nervous when they think about, you know, a canoe.
Right.
Right, because if you take a regular canoe, it is that almost the same style
mm-hmm.
of paddling, you know, compared to like where like the machine that you and Aaron were using. That's more of like a what's that? A crew.
Like a crew, yeah.
Yeah, more crew rowing.
And a skull, yeah. I think
and this is more like freaking Vikings.
Yeah, this is Vikings. Your hand is up over your head almost. It's coming off your forehead, and you're reaching out in front, and you're pulling a lot of water. And, yeah, it's intense. I mean, you can move the boat. I mean, there are sprint races where, you know, you can do a half a mile, and some of the teams do a half a mile in about 3.5 minutes, and that's moving. That's
yeah,
moving.
And you can. And what's great about that is, that, you know, obviously you want to be strong, right? You want to be powerful. You mm-hmm. want to be a powerful part of the team. But if you can't do it in sync with the rest
oh
of the
gosh,
team,
yeah.
you might as well
yeah.
have no muscles at all because it's just as bad.
Yeah, we call it the disoriented centipede. If you're not in sync with each other, if you're not what we call blending together and sweeping the water together in a fluid motion, the canoe will just kind of stutter step and not really work. So we actually, on the back of our shirts in Hawaii, we have the, you know, everybody has heard of the word aloha, and it's kind of the brand word for Hawaii, right? We think of like a postcard, and it says aloha, and it's got a picture of a hula dancer and, you know, maybe Mai Tais. But for the Hawaiian people, I've come to learn, and again, I'm a haole, I'm a white guy from New Jersey, but I spent 16 years in Hawaii, so I learned a little bit. But, you know, they live by aloha in the canoe, and they've actually broken it out into an acronym. And the first word or the first letter is A is akahai, which means kindness. And then there's lokahi, the L of aloha, is unity. And then there's oluolu, which means to be agreeable. And aha'aha'a means humility. Say that one 5 times fast. And then ahonui, which is patience. So you have those Hawaiian words, kindness, unity, to be agreeable, humility, and patience. And, you know, when you have 6 people in the canoe, we can sometimes have what you call paddle ticks or politics, right? So anytime you put
paddle ticks,
anytime funny. You put people together,
that
you're
was funny,
have,
Dave.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That's a good one. Yeah, paddle ticks.
Yeah, cue the drum roll.
Yeah.
But, you have to have all these things. If you're going to paddle in unity, or move the canoe forward, you're going to have to do it with kindness, unity, agreeability, humility, and patience. And so that's the way the people in Hawaii live outside of the canoe, and that's the way we try to live inside of the canoe. So that'll be one of the mantras, if you will, of the New Hope Canoe Club Team Atlantic.
I always think it's funny that, you know, Hawaiians have that mantra, you know, humility, brotherhood, unless it comes to somebody that doesn't live in Hawaii.
Right.
And then it's like, get off our island. It's
there can be some of that. There are a lot of, I met a lot of open people. There are definitely some people in the community that would rather everybody just go home. And it's somewhat understandable.
Yeah. No, I get it. Listen, it's just, you know, it's always kind of funny. There's kind of two underlying tones there. And I've never been blessed enough to go to Hawaii, maybe one day. Like I was saying, I lived in San Diego, which I say is the mainland Hawaii.
There you
it's
go.
Just like to yeah. me, other than, you know, I've never been there, so I couldn't quite say, but it feels like if that's like Hawaii. You know, when you walk out in the air, it's just paradise. Paradise. It's awesome. So how did you get into this? What was your...
How did I get into paddling?
So you were out in Hawaii. Did you go to Hawaii to paddle? Did you live out in Hawaii and feel like somebody inspired you, or what happened?
Yeah, definitely. No, I was actually, like I said, living out there. I had a really great job with NOAA Fisheries Service doing animal response work. Before I went out there, I actually worked on this coast at the National Aquarium in Baltimore running the rescue response program for them. So had dealt with strandings up and down this Delmarva Peninsula, turtles, whales, seals. Did the same kind of work in Hawaii. They have the endangered Hawaiian monk seal out there, so did a lot of work with that seal and, dehookings, disentanglements, and then seasonally the humpback whales come down into Hawaii from Alaska, and we'd have ship strikes, boat strikes of whales that we'd have to investigate, as well as large whale disentanglements, and then also dolphin strandings and small whale strandings. But doing all that work, I had bumped into communities of canoe paddlers, and they were always very helpful. Like, hey, we can take you out in the canoe to check on the whale that was reported to be entangled, or we can give you access to our beach where the hooked monk seal is. And so I came to understand that community of paddlers really did exemplify this this aloha without any type of, for lack of a better word, prejudice. And they would just be very open because they paddle on the water. They appreciate the ocean environment. And they had a vested shared value system of wanting the animals to be cared for and protected. So after meeting a few paddlers, I was like, hey, how can I get involved? I actually said, hey, I'm Howley. Is it okay if I paddle? Because I thought it was just the locals that paddled, right? And I thought, wow, But so I had to, with humility, hey, can I paddle with you guys? And they said, sure. And so, yeah, once the very first day I got in the canoe, it was over. I was hooked. And then just started paddling, 3 to 4 times a week for the last 10 to 12 years before I left Hawaii. And like I said, did a bunch of channel races. The race from Molokai to Oahu is the big dance. That's the one that everybody builds up to throughout the year, and that's 42 miles. And and you're in the canoe for anywhere from 5 to 7 hours. There is some water changes where you jump out and another partial crew jumps in. You get a break on an escort boat, but then you switch back in after about 20 minutes. So it's really, you're working the entire 5 to 7 hours. But it's an addictive sport, and it's really healthy for you. It's great fellowship. There's a lot of fun and laughter, and you get your exercise in, and you're outside.
Do you have, this might be a dumb question, but are there levels of rowing? Because what happens if someone just wants to be out there and rowing, but doesn't want to go 42 hours? Yeah. Obviously, you're not doing that all the time, but someone wants to try it, but isn't sure they would be. Because I'm already intimidated.
You're already intimidated,
and I'm pretty healthy. Well, I know, but this is like the sport of the gods of Hawaii. This is you got to be in some shape.
Yeah, no, there'll be components of it that's what we refer to as recreational paddling, and I'm gonna, where you can come out and just paddle, and we'll go a very short distance, and it's from that where we ask you, hey, would you like to learn the stroke a little better? Would you like to be a part of a team? And so, I'm kind of gung-ho right here as I'm talking to you. I'm getting excited already. But, there will be that aspect of trying it out. And if you like it enough, you can learn the stroke. But, I don't expect us to be the team that we create here in this area to be competitive the first maybe year or two. It's going to be, like they say, like in football or whatever, building years. And so... But yeah, there'll definitely be a, get up to speed recreational paddling. There'll be paddling for kids with special groups. The competitive is only one aspect of it.
Yeah, because listen, I'd love to do that, but I'm also not getting bumped out by the bigger guy that's like, listen, I'm better than you. You're out. And I'll be like, oh man, but I've been here. I want
to. Yeah, well, no, and there's an aspect to that too. We have the canoe club slogan with the New Hope one on Oahu, which is, we have a seat for you in the canoe. And it's not all about, some canoe clubs will do time trials and you actually have to compete for your seat in a canoe. But the way that we run it in the New Hope system is that if you're there and you're trying and you're showing loyalty by coming to practice, you're gonna be placed with the crew, ahead of someone else.
Yeah, well, that's what I think kind of what was the final breaking point for the dragon boat races. That is that, you know, all of a sudden became kind of like these ringer teams,
right?
Yeah. And all of a sudden you've got like, you know, Olympians that all of a sudden work for your company, and you're like, wait a minute, this is so like anything else. You take it to the next level, and then you kind of lose the fun. I would love to. I just thinking about this. I would love to do something like this. I just don't want to. You know, I'm not an Olympian. I don't want to disappoint. I don't want to find myself out because I'm not able to be the best. So
yeah, well, you're sitting across from me, and I'm not an Olympian either. You can see that by looking at me. But
hey, I don't know. I've never seen an Olympic rower. You may be the badass rower.
I may be the one. Yeah,
you might be that guy. But I think it's important that if someone's, you know, that we get that message out. That listen, there may be some casual people that just want to get out and do that and row it.
Yeah, I'd rather see a team full of, you know, people who are having fun and, you know, fellowshipping in and out of the canoe, as opposed to, I mean, yeah, I might have one ringer team that I take to Miami, but
the crew.
But no, but I mean, again, it's more about, I'd rather have.
Yeah, get a little closer to the mic.
I'd rather have people out there having fun and having that kind of team unity idea.
So how many people on a team, or how many people in a boat?
So there's six people in a boat.
So do you all pick up the boat and walk the boat over to the water and then put the boat in like they do in crew?
Yes, exactly.
Same kind of thing?
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's six people in a canoe. There's a steersman in the back. There's seat one is usually a smaller build person that is the stroker that kind of keeps the pace of the canoe, puts the blade out, and is moving the blade in a fashion that the rest of the boat can keep up, but answers to commands from the steersman to pick it up or bring it back. And then seat two will call the changes. So unlike dragon boat racing, you switch sides about every 15 strokes so that you're not burned out on one side. And also the canoe won't run if everybody's on one side. So we have to switch back and forth. So seat two will call out a hut, and that will cue you to switch your paddle over ho on the next. So it's hut ho is the command for switching over. And then seats 3, 4, and 5 we call the engine room. Those are people who are not talking and they're just paddling, and they're usually the stronger people.
No socializing from those groups.
Yeah, right. Do not speak. Yes. No, people talk, but they're mostly just focused on moving the canoe forward.
Is there a season for this, or is this year round?
Well, in Hawaii, it's year-round. Out here, obviously, we're not paddling competitively during the winter months. I just last weekend went up to Philadelphia, and the Philadelphia Canoe Club, those folks paddle on the weekends throughout the winter. And I said, well, what do I wear? And they said, well, you got to buy a Farmer John wetsuit and a dry suit top and a small compact PFD to wear. And so
personal flotation device.
You got it. Yeah, thank you. And
so if you were to fall in.
If you were to fall in, it's like 40 degree water. So hypothermia happens very, very quickly. And so
does that thing release because of the water or the cold, or do you have to pull it?
No, these are small, but they're not the ones with the cartridge where you have to pull them. They actually are small, but they're big enough to keep you afloat.
Okay.
So if your crew goes over and one of you passes out, the rest of them can grab you by your life jacket and bring you in. But yeah, I was like, I don't know about this bra, you know, dry suit. Yeah. Dry suit top paddling in the wintertime when we used to wear like, you know, a tank top at that. And so, but, yeah, it was amazing. We paddled strong and, but yeah, the season out here really is from about April, May through about October, maybe November, but all the competitive races go from late spring to early fall.
Well, I can see April water being pretty cold still, but I can see like October, November, even like, I don't even know, maybe even in December, the water not being that bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely October. I've been in the ocean in October. It's not that bad. But the air.
Yeah.
So air cold, water warm. Yeah. You know, it's always funny because at the end of the summer, I'm like, ah, we could be at the beach all for half the fall. And the problem is, once you get out of the water, it's cold.
Yeah,
you're like, never mind.
Yeah, exactly.
So is the? I mean, if you had a perfect picture, what would it look like? What would you have? A couple? Do you have any boats yet?
So I have purchased one canoe from the Philadelphia Canoe Club. They're really supportive and wanting, you know, this effort to work down here. And so they've sold me a canoe, and it's an older style canoe. And then I have two of the Unlimiteds, those lighter carbon fiberglass boats on order, which they need to travel from, I think it's Japan actually, but they're coming over. And so I'm hoping to get those things in the springtime, but with all that we know about supply chain issues and there's a new surge of COVID, I'm not sure. But I'll at least have one canoe in the Lewis area by actually February.
Well, COVID is, you know, in the end, it's about, I think we need, you know, without judgment, you know, we could all probably do a little more exercising.
Yes.
I think that we're learning that that has become a little bit of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like it or not, not here to hurt feelings, but it's reality.
No, for sure.
And, you know, whether it's canoeing or just walking, you know, or going for a run or biking or whatever it is, we need to get more active.
Yes,
and,
we do.
And we need to want to get more active. You know, it's hard to tell people. It's even, you know, and I ran this morning, but I'm not always into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to tell people that they need to be more active, right? I know that the reason I got into being active, the reason I got into running is because I wanted to quit smoking.
Mm.
And that was in 1999. And I had come out, I got sober in 1997. And I was going through this change in my life. You know, I had lived a big portion of my life as almost like a trash can.
Mm.
Eating, drinking, smoking, doing whatever. Whatever my heart desired.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, I was like, I've had enough. This is awful. And I got sober, still smoking. But then I was like, you know, I want to quit smoking. And I started running. And I started to love running more than I love smoking.
That's great.
And I can remember when I was going to school up in New Jersey and going to the gym and running and then smoking in my car. I'd run on the treadmill and smoke in my car. And it was just... But you know what? I was trying, right?
Yeah, no,
it was my personal journey. Nobody had asked me. It wasn't a request. It wasn't required. It was just something I was tired of doing what I'd been doing. And I started doing it. And then one day I just stopped the smoking. I ran and stopped smoking.
Amen.
And but it was what I wanted to do. It's people hate to be told they need to exercise. People hate to be told they need to be in better shape. They just hate it. And
sure.
I don't blame them. Nobody likes to be told. So it's inspiring. It's, you know, I love the idea of doing something different.
Yeah.
You know, listen, we got the gym. Love the gym. We got running. We got biking. You know, but they've been taken. Everybody's taken those, right? There's no spots left.
Right, right.
But now we could try something different, rowing.
Yeah.
So where, like, let's say we have, like, what physically do you have to be able to do to row? Like, are there any restrictions when it comes to rowing? Where?
No, not really. I think it's, I mean, you do initially when you try the rec paddling and you say, hey, I like this and I want to go to the next level. I'd like to start training with you guys. There'd be training about 3 times a week. So meaning going out in the canoe 3 times a week and doing somewhere between 2 and 10 miles. We'll build up to that. But we would also encourage people to work out outside of the canoe. So like you said, it could just be walking. It could be running. It could be light gym work. But it's not required. But, yeah, the canoe offers it's like you brought up a really good point of, like, if you get sick of the gym and you get sick of running, which we all have done and walked away from it, this is something that is actually fun while you're working out. And so you get out of the canoe feeling, you know, refreshed because you've had to, you know, fresh air in your lungs, but it's also, hey, I had a great time, but I also feel, you know, I'm a little sore and I feel really like I got a good workout. And so it is something new, it's novel, and you don't sometimes realize you're even exercising. But we do suggest that people do something outside of the canoe to stay in shape. And then also you really need to know how to swim. And that's only for safety. It's very rare that the canoe will flip over, but occasionally it will. It does have that ama and the yakus on the side, but it still is possible. If you have a good steersman, it shouldn't be. But if the boat flips over, we do drills that talk about you know, the boat flips over. How do you right the canoe? Who gets in the canoe first? Who bails? Who grabs the paddles? That kind of thing. And so, not to scare anybody, but you should be able to swim if you're going to participate in this sport.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. I'm thinking people that don't know how to swim, this probably isn't on their list of stuff they want to try. I know. They don't even like walking around.
I actually have met people in Hawaii who paddle who don't know how to swim. And they're really great paddlers. And then, you know, 5 years into it, wait, you don't know how to swim? You live on an island? But it has happened.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because, you know, there's people that may not know how to swim, but you should learn how to float.
Yeah, float or tread water.
And it is, you know, especially with like, you know, and I try to push this message to my kids. When you live at the beach, you know, we have rip currents.
Sure.
And there's nothing like being taken out to sea. Because as soon as you feel that rip current, you're basically going to end up in Hawaii. Yeah. That's what you feel like.
Or
like,
Panama.
Right, or Panama, whatever's on this side. But the point is you don't feel like you're coming back to shore anytime soon. Yeah, right. It gets a little freaky. We panic. Right. I always tell my kids, just get on your back and just start floating.
Yep,
fill your gut with air and just float it out. We will get you.
Yeah, yeah.
We will definitely get you.
And that's the same thing.
Well, and you know, one of the fun things, so I do run. I started running, and one of the cool things that I've been doing, and I've been running since 99, so, you know, do the math, a couple, 21 years now it's been, and I run with people. You know, we rely on each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's a running team. Usually it's me, me and another person. Maybe three of us might run, but we commit to running with each other, and we hold each other accountable, and there's days I don't feel like running. Mm-hmm. You know, like this morning, my buddy, me and a friend of mine usually commit to Mondays. I have another friend that I commit to Wednesdays, and because I don't feel like it always, mm-hmm. especially at 5:30 in the morning. So
when it's cold too, right?
Oh, well, you know, it's funny, Dave, is that sometimes it's nicer.
Right.
Refreshing. This morning was a beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. I see that.
It seemed like it was below zero from the window, but once outside in my running gear, I was like, man, this is special.
Yeah.
I'd rather run this morning than I would have like in July. July is brutal.
Yeah.
But the point is that, you know, I team up with these people and we hold each other accountable and we show up for one another. And that's what's kind of cool about, it sounds like for this boat, you know, this rowing is that you're doing it with six people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's nice to be involved in a group that we're being held accountable and sometimes we'll show up. Like I won't show up for myself.
Right.
But I'll show up for you, Dave.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And sometimes that's just enough to push a person to a point where they really start to feel like they're a part of a group.
Amen. No, exactly. I think the accountability is definitely it. And everything you're describing is what we talk about in Outrigger Canoe Paddling is the accountability. And yeah, and you might have an off day like seat three. It's like, what's going on with seat three today? They're dragging. And, you know, hey, what, you okay? And you talk about it outside of the canoe, like, what's going on? You all right? Or... and just have an off day or, you know, something more serious. And it turns into...
We got you, C3.
Yeah, we got you, C3, yeah. And it's all about... and you feel accountable. You feel like, well, I can't just sleep in this morning because the crew won't be full if I'm not there. And so exactly what you're saying. And we support each other. And, you know, we've laughed and we've cried together as club members. And it becomes a family. Or we say in Hawaii, ohana. So it's one big ohana. And I feel like, you know, the canoe community, say that five times fast, the canoe community is one big, huge ohana. I've already been talking to, like I said, I paddled with Philly, been already talking to some people at Ikora and a New Jersey team. And it's all like-minded people who just love the water, love the outside, love canoe paddling, and ultimately are there for each other. So although I'm not in Hawaii, I feel like when I talk to these people, I'm in Hawaii because it's that ohana. It's that circle of people.
Are you going to look for sponsors?
Yeah, eventually.
I'd sponsor you.
Would you?
I'll give you some money.
Okay, good. I appreciate that.
I mean, I don't need a sticker, but I would absolutely.
Yeah.
I think there'd be some people around here that would absolutely help to your cause. I know I would.
Well, I appreciate that because I will tell you that I'm in. So this is very new. I just got here in November, and I'm working on forming a nonprofit formally, but I have already between buying three canoes, getting a trailer built, and some other things, I've already sunk about $100,000 of my own money into this just because I believe in it, and I've just retired, and so I felt like it was a good use of funds, but yes, I will.
$100,000.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I was thinking maybe like a couple hundred.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
$100,000.
Yeah, $100,000. Yeah. Well, no. I mean, whatever, you know, whatever sponsorship looks like, we'll take it. But yeah. So, but I mean, it can be anything, and anything will help because you do have to maintain the canoes and things like that.
Well, I think if you're probably, you know, and what I'm saying is, you know, I just would. If you need to help, I'd pitch in to help you out.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see it get going. I think, you know, like everything that gets started, eventually, you know, it'll probably become some sort of competition, and it'll become bigger and bigger, and then, you know, it'll be hard to maintain. I hope that doesn't happen, but,
yeah.
You know, I think if it's just getting people out, you know, it's fun when. You know, when you get involved with a team, a group of six, or, you know, I even had a relationship with a guy who used to just say, call me every day. This is when I was getting sober, and I remember I'd be like, well, he clearly knows I have something important to say. Like, just this relationship of being someone counting on me and being accountable started to open up this weird self-centered side of me that I started to be exposed. And I learned a lot about myself. Like, wow, Tom, you really think a lot of yourself, you know, all the time. And it started to create a little humility into my life.
Mm.
And when you are held accountable and people, you know, do rely on you, it does start to create some humility. And some people are deficient in it.
Oh, I think a lot of people are deficient in humility these
Absolutely.
Days.
Absolutely. I always say I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency. Well, my disease is I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility.
I got it. Me too.
It's a tough position. So to get into something, I love the phrase, I'm not living unless I'm suffering. And believe me, you grinding in that group of six paddling through that water, you're suffering.
Yeah, there's a point where you're like the takeoff is really good when you know, like when we're doing the Molokai race and it's 42 miles and we have 7 hours ahead of us. It's like in the beginning, you're like, yeah, gung ho, and you're going. And then when you get to Waikiki and you're coming around the corner the last 3 miles, you're like, okay, this is why we do this. But when you're in the middle of that channel, you're like, why in the world am I doing this? But it is very humbling, and you do learn a lot about yourself. But no, I hear you. I mean, we all have. That human tendency is to, you know, survival first and, you know, all about you and self-centeredness, and we all have to work on it. And again, that was the Aloha word. That was the, trying to look it up real quick. I should know this, but the humility is the ha-ha part of the Aloha. And I think kindness, unity, to be agreeable, humility and patience, all those things we can all work on.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I'm very, this weekend was very weird for me. I felt like I saw like the future, and it doesn't really seem like we're headed in a great spot.
I don't think so. And I thank you for bringing that up, because I think I've felt that but wasn't able to articulate it the way you did. But and again, to bring it back to the paddling, I think getting people outside and, you know, again, it can be people who don't agree on, say, politics, or, you know, whether COVID is real, or whatever your you know, issue du jour is. But if we can get in the canoe and paddle together, unified, then that's a step forward.
Oh my gosh. If I like this morning, I ran this morning, and as soon as I got done running, I had this Aloha kind of feeling.
There you go, brother.
You know, I was just like, chill.
Aloha, brother.
You know, I have a little breakfast, a little coffee, do a little podcast. You know, it's all good.
It's all good.
But when I don't run, when I don't suffer a bit, when I don't take myself down a couple pegs, then all of a sudden, you know, the traffic, you know, is heavy all of a sudden. Like, you know, everything's an inconvenience. I'm consumed by self. And it can make for a miserable day.
Sure.
And, you know, we were coming through a period, I don't know. Dave, I don't know. The whole world's changing, right? How old are you, Dave?
57.
I'm 53, so we're around the same age. I mean, I was telling somebody the other day, and I haven't lived that long, but never seen life like this.
No, me neither.
And how I feel about it is weird. It's weird, man. And I don't know what to, restrain from pen and tongue, you know, just keeping my mouth shut, keeping my nose out of other people's business. I love Pat McAfee. He said, you are where your feet are. Mm. And I love, you know, I mean, you can, how many different ways can you say, you know, stay in your square?
Stay in your lane, yeah.
Stay in your lane. But I, for some reason, I like that. You are where your feet are. And I was like, I get that. And it's almost now more important than ever to really do that, because there's so many opinions. And now with the internet, and it's not like the internet is new, but these new, it's just more and more opportunities to hear and talk. And it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming.
Well, and everybody's got an opinion. And even if they aren't factually aware, they have their own opinion. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if I would suggest, you know, we all have New Year's resolutions, and maybe it's fasting or refraining from or abstaining from social media for a little while, because it's really not doing anybody any good. And I don't know, not to plug a documentary, but I don't know how many people have seen Social Dilemma, but it's really a story about some people who have developed some of these social media platforms are like acknowledging that they've created a monster, and how do they put the genie back in the bottle? Because it was meant to be a thing to connect all of us and to keep in touch and share, and it's turned into this three-headed monster.
Well, I love that, how they, the guys who created it, then they create a show, and then they kind of yell at us for being on it. It's
well,
like,
they're, well, they're, hey. I think they're backpedaling, too. I think they're saying, I think they're also saying that they would like to, they're like, oh, my God, what did we do? I think there's some self-awareness of they've created something that's got a mind of its own now, and that wasn't their, I think, honestly, they're saying that wasn't their original intent, but, yeah, it's...
Well, unfortunately, this problem, I feel, in just my personal thought, is nothing new.
Yeah.
It's gluttony.
Yes. Yeah.
Gluttony at its finest. And mm-hmm. gluttony, unfortunately, is a deadly sin.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around for a long time. It's not the first time gluttony showed up. But we're very gluttonous. And business is gluttonous. Our lifestyle are gluttonous. Our how we eat is gluttonous. It's just, you know, you give me one, I need three, right? Yeah. So it's just it's unfortunate, but it's nothing new.
Agreed.
But it's not, doesn't mean it has to bring us down, you know. And I think you know, trying to do different stuff, you know, like I was saying, it's hard to tell someone that they can't be gluttonous.
Yeah,
you know, it's none of my, it's
they
none
have to
of my business
on their own. Yeah.
Yeah. That's your own journey. I've been a trash can. You know, there's been times in my life where I'm absolutely the worst. I have glimpses of it now. But I'm not perfect. And, you know, I think it's now it's just about loving our neighbor and trying to inspire one another to just be kind of cool. You know, chill. And
couldn't agree more.
But yeah. I am excited about this. You know, I love the idea of doing, you know, I would like to try doing the paddling. I just, one of the things that I worry about when something like this, because I get excited about stuff like this, is that what is if I can't show up every time? So what's a schedule like? I'm signing up.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I sign? And what's my new schedule for my life like?
Well, I can tell you that, because I'm retired, I'll be able to run crews in the morning, afternoon, and, you know, for people who work, you know, in the early evening before they go home. So when I used to paddle on Oahu when I was working full time, we would paddle on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 5 o'clock, and we'd go until, you know, about the sun goes down, which was, there was an hour or two. And then on Saturday mornings is when we would go long. We'd go from Sand Island, if you know Oahu, from Sand Island to Diamond Head and back, and that was 14 miles. You know, so we would want to get on some kind of a schedule. You were talking about like crew accountability, that kind of a thing. So we do want to get on some kind of a schedule, but inevitably with the canoe club, there's always somebody that can't make it because, you know, life happens and you're not going to be, you know, shunned from the group because you couldn't show up. But for the competitive paddlers, we would like to get on some kind of schedule. So it'll likely be some kind of a three times a week schedule to stay in shape, to grow together. But it'll be very flexible. And I expect there to be a sect of people who are coming after work hours, and some that can only make it on the weekends, and then some who can have a flexible schedule and paddle in the morning and the afternoon. So it's to be seen.
Is this a retirement sport? Is this something
No.
you can only do after you retire? Cause
no, I don't think so.
I got to run before the kids get up, and then, you know, I have three kids, so.
Yeah. No, for sure. And again, I think it'll be flexible for, you know, different groups having different availabilities, I'll make it flexible for that.
Okay. That's awesome. When are we going to start? When's our first row?
The first row. Paddling, actually, is what we say, but not
Oh, I'm sorry, paddling.
Paddling.
dummy.
It's all good. Probably sometime in April.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to, do you have a website? I know I read the, I know you had the one, the .org. Is that your site?
No, that's the
East Coast Outriggers Association
site. Yeah,
that's
East Coast wide. Yeah. Mine is still in development, but I can give you an email address, which, do you want that now or do you want me to?
Well, you can say it now. I'm going to put it in, I'll put it in the description. I don't put a lot of stuff. I'll put your email in there. I mean, you have a Facebook page, I would imagine.
I'm starting that up too. Again, this is very new. So, I will shoot you the Facebook.
Now you got to do it.
Now I got to do it like this week, which is good.
See, this is like your sort of, this is kind of like a paddler's group right here. I just got you involved and now people are going to be like, all right, we're ready.
We're ready. We're
like,
ready.
Damn it. I was kind of thinking about doing it.
Yeah.
You had a paddle in the water.
Yeah. What I can give you right now is a phone number, and then I can shoot you the rest of the stuff.
Well, we'll just put it in the description. I didn't know if you had an email or a website that people could go check it out. It's in development.
Yeah, it's in development.
You got some time.
Yeah.
April. Had you been to Delaware before? What brought you to Delaware?
Delaware.
Your job.
Yeah, when I worked at the National Aquarium in Baltimore doing animal response stuff, we would pick up seals in Ocean City and a dolphin in Fenwick and, you know, stuff down in Accomack County of Virginia. And so we worked Chesapeake Bay and Delmarva Peninsula for animal stranding stuff. And so I was familiar with the coastline. And then growing up as a kid, we lived in the cornfields of Pennsylvania and we would come down to Fenwick Island and vacation. That was our vacation spot.
Nice.
Yeah, and then we'd come up to Lewis for lunch, and then go back down to Fenwick.
Have you been following the telescope?
The 3-meter telescope in Hawaii?
No, the James Webb telescope they launched yesterday.
Oh, sorry. No, I've been kind of out of touch with that.
Well, it's hard to be in touch because they were going to launch it, and they keep delaying it and delaying. It was supposed to be launched on Christmas Eve, and then they launched it. They launched it on Christmas Day. If you go to Tracking James Webb Telescope on YouTube, they've got this great...
Cool.
Site, and I think it's like 146 motors to open this thing up.
I saw the thing about how it has to unfold perfectly, and I like the part that they said, well, if it doesn't unfold perfectly, they can push a button and it'll shake the thing a little bit, we all knock the toaster on the counter if it's not working. It's got that app on it.
I saw that. I thought that was really cool. And this, you know, and you think about this, so the Hubble was brought up through with the shuttle. You know, they put it in the shuttle, flew it up, or launched it, and then, you know, took it out of the shuttle bay there and put it into an orbit. This one's going a million miles out.
Wow.
It's going so far out that if it doesn't work, it's gone.
Right.
And 146 motors, I might be wrong on that, but I know it's a lot. And if you go to Tracking James Webb on YouTube, they have this great... So it's a whole timeline, and it's going to take, I think, 30 days to get it a million miles out. And it's like on day 2.5, solar panel opens. Day 3, you know, one of the Mylar, you know, sunscreens. Because the real big thing is it's a big sunscreen that has to basically open up. And it's made out of kind of like what they make the balloons out of, Mylar balloons.
Yeah.
And it's on these rolls and these motors pull it all out. And it's 5 layers. It's very, I don't know, it's very cool. I'm interested in this stuff. I love space, cool. One of the other places that's undiscovered is really in the ocean, right? I mean, I was watching something on YouTube, the 10 most mysterious animals found at the bottom of the sea, and you're seeing some aliens down there.
That was a cool thing. When I was in Hawaii, I got to see so I worked for NOAA, and one branch of NOAA was the deep sea exploration side, and those guys occasionally were bringing up an octopus that they hadn't seen before, and they got to name it. And when I first had moved to Hawaii... In 2005, there was a whale skull that was sent up to us in Honolulu from Palmyra Atoll, and it was the skull of a beak. We all looked at it, and we're like, that's a beaked whale skull. But once we sent it to a few people, one of them was here in the D.C. area. The Smithsonian has a marine mammal program, and they looked at it and like, this is a beaked whale, but we haven't seen this one before. And so, lo and behold, it was a beaked whale species that had previously not been described. And then talking to some of the people who do underwater acoustic research, listening for whales, they had said, wow, that's interesting, because for years we heard this thing in that area that sounded like a beaked whale, but kind of had its own little dialect, a little bit different. And so here, I was in Hawaii 9 months, and we found a new whale.
Wow.
Which was really cool.
Well, I love that stuff. There's I think there's a YouTube channel that just plays whale music.
Yeah.
It's not YouTube. It's a website. Do you know what whale sounds or whale?
I've had like DVDs of that, but I haven't heard of the
There's YouTube something channel. On, yeah. I think it's either YouTube or just a website, but it's basically microphones that are out in the ocean that just listen to whales.
Listening, yep.
And, oh my God, can you imagine if we could translate that?
We might not want to know what they're saying.
I do. Well, I mean, you know what? They can't be talking about Seinfeld, right? I mean, it's got to be pretty much ocean stuff.
Yeah, they are talking about it.
But, you know, even, I mean, just in the last probably 20 years, I mean, just the battle that goes on between sperm whales and giant squids. I mean, they didn't have any proof of it. You could see the scrapes and scratches on the sides of the sperm whale, but you didn't really know until they put these giant cameras and mounted them with suction cups under these whales.
Critter cam.
And then they watched these big squids come in, and they would start, I guess the whales were eating them.
Yeah.
And just the battle that goes on down there, it's wild.
We'd find the big squid beaks when we'd get a big dead sperm whale. We'd find these big squid beaks in there. But, yeah, we didn't. We'd have this, like you're saying, the scrapes and scratches. We'd have stomach contents. We'd have this anecdotal information. But you never had the, like, wow, that's what's going on.
Right.
I was part of a project, or part of the team that developed the project called Critter Cam for Hawaiian monk seals. And so out there in Hawaii, there was this public perception that the monk seals were eating all the fish, and that they were just vacuum cleaners taking all the fish. And that's why shoreline fishing was, you know, declining. And so they were blaming it on the monk seals opposed to blaming it on the overfishing. And once we put a critter cam on the seals and saw them just underwater and swimming past full big schools of fish because they were going to lift that rock to get the octopus out of the rock, we were able to show that, no, look at this monk seal swimming past plenty of fish and not eating everything it sees in sight. So, the Critter Cam project, actually worked with it when I was in the Baltimore Aquarium in the very beginning when they were trying the suction cups on different types of whales. We were part of that very beginning part before it became famous, just to test the suction cups. But it's a great project to see what these critters are really doing because, you know, when a dolphin comes to the surface or a whale comes to the surface, they're only spending about 2 to 5% of their time at the surface, and what they're doing underneath the water is just not known.
Yeah. Here, let me. I love you.
Be a good boy.
Okay.
I see you.
Yeah. Give my baby seal a hug.
Baby seal.
Well, and I love all that stuff. There's a thing on. I won't get into too much politics, but what's going on in the ocean is really a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to regret it. We're going to regret it. And I don't know how we, you know, I don't understand why we focus on one thing but not on something else. Yeah. I mean, like, what's going on, and what's crazy is that the ocean is it's so big and so wild, but it runs like a freaking watch, right? Mm-hmm. It's like one of the big problems they're having now is a lot of their overhunting of sharks.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize what a role sharks play. They eat triggerfish, right? They eat the fish that love to eat the coral. If you don't have something that stops that, then they eat all the coral.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're overhunting these sharks for fins. I mean, of course, we've all heard it. We're like, oh, that's terrible. How come we're not doing anything about it?
Right.
Because we're losing these huge barrier reefs, right?
Well, there's another thing, too, is I don't know if you've heard this stat, but, you know, one of the whales that I worked with when I was in Baltimore was a little pygmy sperm whale that had swallowed cigarette wrapper, trash bag, Mylar balloon, all this junk in its stomach, and we took that stuff out of its stomach, and we did a documentary, we had a little coloring book, and it all talked about marine debris because of this one whale that had swallowed all this plastics. Happy ending. We're able to rehabilitate the whale and release it to the wild. But I recently heard a stat that by 2050, even if we did something tomorrow, there'll be more plastic material in the oceans in 2015, the mass of that, than the biomass of what lives in the ocean. So that means all the living biomass, from the tiniest plankton to the fish to the shark to the whale, all of that living material, there'll be more plastic material than living material in the ocean in whatever that is, 30-some years, 28 years.
Yeah, there was a. I watched a documentary about this guy up in Connecticut who had created this plastic that had a time release to it.
Okay.
And he could build the plastic, and he could set it for 24 months. He could set it for 12 months. He could set it for an hour, I think. He could the composition of the plastic that he could make, adding dirt, certain things, taking out certain things, the plastic would start to decompose over a period of time. I do not understand why that guy has not been, you know, put up on someone's shoulders and raised around and carried through the town, because this sounds like, and maybe he has, I don't know. Maybe we are, you know, the biggest dumper of plastic is cruise lines.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it, yeah.
It's like, but, you know, the point is that, you know, we're all going to be in virtual reality, Dave.
Oh, come out and paddle.
They're all going to be in virtual reality.
Avoid the virtual reality. Come and paddle.
Yeah, well, you know, you could do, eventually you could probably do some cool training in virtual reality to paddle and then really take it out to the ocean. But it's like, it's inevitable. It's terrible. Well, I love it. I think, so we'll post some information on the description. But maybe once we get close to April, we'll have you back. And
that'd be awesome.
We'll double check and see how you're doing. And
good. And by then, I'll have a real website and stuff.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, it's not really fair to you. I grabbed you from the parking lot.
That's all good.
I'm like, this bro's got a pulse. He's a hustler.
I could tell you
he built something.
I'm like, brother must be having a slow news week. But anyway, it's all good.
No, I do a podcast every week.
All right, brother.
I could find 100 people. These are the stories that I like, the hustlers. You know, you built a row machine.
Yeah.
And Aaron's going to use it.
Yeah.
I love that. So, no, this is the most important thing going on for me right now, and I love it. And thank you.
I appreciate the time, and this has really been fantastic. And I kind of came to Lewis. I had a ton of friends in Hawaii. I'm like, I don't know anybody. So thank you for taking me under your wing and, you know, letting the community hear what this is about. And, thank you.
I think by the next time you're on this podcast, you're going to have a lot of friends. You're going to be very, very full of friends, and that'll be great. But, I love the idea, and I think we have to start preserving something that we used to do all the time, which is go outside. Amen. And I feel like we're losing it. So keep inspiring. Keep giving people new ideas to do things, you know, because we're bored with running. We're bored with biking. We need to do something new. I'm excited about trying the rowing. I just don't want to I don't want to commit and then find out like I'm struggling, and then
it's a no pressure environment.
Okay.
All right, brother.
All right, bro.
All right, bro.
Take it easy, bro.
Aloha, bro.
All right. Talk to you later.
God bless.
Bye.